Welcome back to Stop Christian Nationalism. It's another year in the struggle against Christian nationalism. Today is January 2nd, and what that means is that we are out of the time of year in which we're accustomed to taking a rest, having a bit of a breather with all of the holiday activity that goes on. Different people have different holidays, but it's a time when we have a lot of concentration of them. And that ends typically, for most people, with the end of the calendar year. January 2nd is the first full day back for most people. Of course, we've really been on holiday since the beginning of November. I think you know what I'm talking about. Progressives, call them liberals, they've been feeling really disappointed, dejected, despondent, despairing about the election of Donald Trump. And I get that. A lot of people were really active in resisting the movement to re-elect Donald Trump, to put him back in the White House a second time. We nearly won it. Donald Trump won by a really narrow margin of the popular vote, just 1.47%, according to the vote count at Cook Political Report. Donald Trump doesn't have a mandate, but boy, does he have the power. Yeah, they control the Supreme Court and a whole lot of other federal courts. They control the U.S. Congress, starting not too long from now. And in less than 3 weeks, Donald Trump will be sitting back in the Oval Office. And there is no illusion this time that Donald Trump is not preparing to take action quickly. Along with Donald Trump comes Christian nationalism and a whole bunch of ugly stuff that Christian nationalists support. And one of those things is raw power. Now, I was on Blue Sky recently and I had an interaction, a discussion with somebody. After somebody made a short post saying that, gosh, what Donald Trump and the Christian nationalists are doing, it's not Christianity, it's just the pursuit of power. And the thing that stood out to me in reaction to that statement is that actually those two things are not as separate as it seems. The pursuit of power, the concentration of power, in fact, is part of Christian nationalist ideology, and that's because it is embedded in Christian ideology. And it's embedded in Christian ideology because of the alignment of Christianity historically with systems of raw, bloody, corrupt power. So it's not a mistake. It's not a coincidence. It's not an aberration. It is not a departure from Christianity for the Christian nationalists to be engaged in such crude exercise of power through Donald Trump and his allies. And I want to talk about one instance of that as an example, because for a lot of people, they will be thinking, no, Christianity is all about, you know, peace, love, and understanding. You know, there are sometimes in Christianity, some people, some Christians who do stand up for that, who do speak out for peace, love, and understanding. And it sounds all great, but if you think that that's all that Christianity is, you are missing a big part of the doctrine in the text and the history of Christianity and its alignment over its entire history with brutal nationalism and violence. I want to talk about Pam Bondi. Pam Bondi is going to be Donald Trump's nominee for Attorney General of the United States. That's the person who runs the Justice Department. And Pam Bondi has made it pretty darn clear she is not going to be independent of Donald Trump. She will see herself as a political appointee whose job it is to enforce loyalty to Donald Trump and to use the law and the FBI and physical force to compel loyalty to Donald Trump and his allies across the United States of America, putting political opponents in prison. You know, before Pam Bondi was nominated, we of course had Matt Gaetz, and Matt Gaetz has been thoroughly publicly shamed, which is appropriate given some of the things that he's done. But I was really concerned about the singular focus of the critics of Matt Gaetz. They were focused on his sexual behavior and drug use, which was illegal drug use. And, you know, he had sex with a teenage kid, underage, under the age of 18. That is illegal. And he worked like heck to cover that up for years. And finally, we got the report out from Congress about that. But what a lot of people did not comment about was the problem with Matt Gaetz that came when he advocated for violence against Black Lives Matter protesters. When he allied himself with Kyle Rittenhouse, who went to a public protest and shot people. Matt Gaetz has supported Christian nationalism as well. Matt Gaetz has spoken out against the Bill of Rights, against true freedom of religion in the United States of America. But those kinds of things didn't come up. What came up a lot and what continues to come up in, for example, criticism of Pete Hegseth is the personal failures, the personal abuses. And those are important, but that's not all that there is to be concerned about. What we don't hear politicians speaking up about, because it's a little bit more sensitive, is that a huge number of these nominees, like Pam Bondi, like Pete Hegseth, are Christian nationalists dedicated and have been over many years to putting Christianity in power, giving Christianity the power of government to impose religion on everybody in the United States of America. When I talk about that with Pam Bondi, I'm thinking of one specific instance, although she has spoken out on many occasions in favor of giving Christianity power over the government of the United States of America and of the state of Florida. In Florida, in the year 2011, Pam Bondi used her political power to advocate for something called Amendment 7. And Amendment 7 aimed to change the Constitution of the state of Florida. And there was a provision, and there still is, thankfully, in the state of Florida, in the state constitution, saying that you can't use the government to fund religious organizations. And that is really just a reiteration of the federal standard. We have in the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, the very first clause of the First Amendment, that Congress shall make no act regarding an establishment of religion. And what that means is that you cannot have government getting involved in issues of religion. A further amendment later on expanded these federal guidelines of what applies to Congress to all levels of government in the United States. So that's in the Constitution. In Florida, they have that in their state constitution. But Pam Bondi worked in 2011 as part of a Christian nationalist campaign to eliminate that, to replace that part of Florida's constitution with language stating that it is illegal for the government not to fund religious organizations when the religious organizations ask for money. This is exactly the opposite of how it's supposed to be. And you do have to wonder why people who say that they believe in an all-powerful God who can do anything at all and who wants to promote his religion, which is supposedly Christianity, why do they need the help of the government? They've got an all-powerful God already. It kind of makes you think that these people don't actually believe what they are saying, that they actually think that their God, their Christian God, is a weakling, somebody who can't stand up for himself, somebody who needs a government handout. Well, that's how the churches are acting, for sure. I mean, it's a fact. Churches, Christian churches across America are withering. There are exceptions, of course. There are churches that are doing very well. but they are doing well mostly because of the destruction of other Christian churches. They're sucking up the remnants of the people who used to go to more churches, but churches have been closing. The number of Americans, the proportion of our population that identifies itself as Christian, has been in decline for decades because people are seeing that Christian churches are kind of corrupt. When I talk about corruption, I'm talking about that on a couple of levels. There is the Matt Gaetz, Pete Hegseth personal scandal level of sex abuse scandals, embezzlement, a lot of church leaders running financial scams. I mean, it's not uncommon for Christian church pastors to make money on the side by selling insurance packages, for example, to their congregants. Or, you know, nowadays a new thing is cryptocurrency in church communities. And we've talked about that here on the podcast. When we mix Christianity with government, it is destructive to the credibility of the government because you have the government taking action on the basis of faith rather than facts. That's just really not effective government policy. You know, when we have the USDA, the FDA, they're doing important work to protect our health and to protect our food supply, the medicines that we use. Make sure that they're effective. You don't want to have the federal government or state governments, for that matter, promoting faith-based medicine, essentially faith healing, which is a scam. There's a lot of medical scams in Christian nationalism. But it's also bad for the followers, the members of Christian congregations. And this is a point that I think doesn't get talked about enough. What happens to different churches when a national government aligns itself with Christianity? Do all churches prosper? That's not quite how it works, and history has shown that. What you have is a certain selection of who gets power under Christian nationalism. Which churches are getting federal funds, state funds? Which Christian organizations are going to get government support financially and through endorsements and organizational support? And which churches are going to get left out in the cold? And there is one way to tell which churches are going to benefit most. And that's by looking to see which churches are hosting politicians on Sunday morning. Which Christian churches are opening their doors to local, state, and national candidates for public office to give speeches? Which Christian churches are out there making themselves an arm of partisan political campaigns? Those churches are not doing that out of the goodness of their heart. It's a quid pro quo setup. Because the expectation is that when those politicians get into office, they're going to steer government money to those churches. That's corruption. That's a corruption of those Christian churches. Because those leaders of those churches begin not to make decisions based on what they believe to be right, based upon their religion, but what will give them the most advantage politically. What kinds of connections are they making? And that means that they're aligning themselves with people in power and twisting their religious beliefs to support whatever is going on. People wonder, why are so many Christian leaders of Christian churches going over to Donald Trump? It seems like a mystery until you realize how many of them are hoping to get government funding for their organizations, which is tax exempt, which, because it's tax exempt, is also not being examined, often not being audited very carefully. When you get government sending money without accountability to churches, you make churches into money laundering organizations. And it starts to come together, the whole picture. The fact that you have embezzlement of funds being a big problem in churches, you have financial scams going on there. You have criminal sexual abuse of people being covered up. Churches are places where you go if you want to engage in some nefarious activity and escape scrutiny. Because a lot of people think that churches should not be investigated. They just should be left alone. And it sounds great if you think, well, they're just a bunch of pious people, you know, praying and singing hymns and listening to sermons and having coffee afterwards. And, aw, shucks, that sounds real great. But there are predators who make use of those organizations. And there are predators who are politicians who are making use of those church organizations as well now. But this is not something that's an aberration in Christian history. It can be easy to criticize Donald Trump and the Make America Great red cap Republicans and say they're twisting Christianity. It's never been like this before. But boy, that's just not true. If you take a look at the colonial history of the United States of America, what you look at is having a lot of colonial government affiliated churches that used their power to control people, to punish people who did not belong to the state-sponsored religion. And they got that approach from England itself, where, you know, and not just in England, but across the continent of Europe, you had religious wars going on because religion was politics. Think of King Henry VIII. Think of the English Civil War, where the Puritans, the people who are celebrated here in the United States, the shining city on a hill and all of that nonsense, the Puritans took over England for a while because they could not stand the version of Christianity that was already there. And it was already there in the name of the monarch. Christianity was the state religion, and it was determined by the king or by the queen. Christianity has been aligned with monarchy, and that comes even out of the Old Testament, before there really was Christianity even. But when it really got going was when the Roman Empire aligned itself with Christianity. And that, by the way, was a two-way deal. When Christianity aligned itself with the Roman Empire, that was a decision made on both sides. It was a political alliance where there would be no separation of church and state. You know, Christians like to talk about how persecuted they were under the Roman Empire, but the truth is the Christians actually took over the Roman Empire and then used it to persecute others, to spread their religion at the point of a sword, using the violent power and financial corruption of the Roman Empire to spread their religion. From the start, Christianity has been a nationalist ideology. And I've talked about this with the Book of Revelation, which a lot of Christians don't like to read, both because it's a badly written, garbled text, but also because it has a lot of really unpleasant things to say. One of the things it has to say is that Jesus is going to come back and he is going to smash the independence of the nations through physical force and is going to establish a one-world Christian government, of which he will be not the president, not the senator, not the elected representative, not the prime minister, but will be the king. So here we are, January 2nd, and we are approaching the beginning of Christian nationalism of that kind being in power in the United States of America. We have Pam Bondi, who has a history of working with Christian nationalists to seize power, to use government money to support Christian churches directly, funneling money into churches that people pay in taxes. Which churches are going to come on top? If you're a Christian, will your church be one of the winners or one of the losers? Things are chaotic right now. It's difficult to really predict with any certainty exactly what's going to happen. And certainly I am not on the inside of Donald Trump's circle of trusted advisors. I don't know exactly what he's going to do and when. But Donald Trump has, since before 2016, been exceptionally consistent about this. His intention is to become president so that he can put Christians in power, so that they can impose their religion on all Americans. The motto of Donald Trump's 2024 presidential campaign put it really succinctly: make America pray again. It's a Christian nationalist concentration of power. I understand that people are feeling really stressed out about this. They're right to feel that way. I understand that people are exhausted. And so people have been very appropriately taking a step back and engaging in some self-care. But now it's January 2nd, and at some point, the self-care needs to end, and we need to start taking care of each other. And right now, taking care of each other means standing up to Christian nationalism.